Well, now, ladies and gentlemen of the Legion, this little anecdote that I have just recited illustrates something more than my embarrassment. I shan't go on with the details. It won't be necessary. Because enough has already happened to point up the moral of this discourse. This is a time of fog and uncertainty. And a time of fog and uncertainty is a time of danger to the people who lead as well as to the people who follow. There is nothing that you can do in time of fog that will be constructive and right. The only thing to do when you are enveloped in a fog is to lift it. Now, unfortunately, it is impossible to lift the fog that is settled down upon us by God Almighty, as the one was that night. But the sort of fog that blinds us today in the United States is a fog of our own fabrication. We cannot see the true course of our American ship of state precisely because we are blinded as to the purpose for which the American state was created. We are blinded as to its objective. And a ship that sails through fog, full speed ahead, as ours is sailing now, is a ship that is destined to be destroyed. Maybe tomorrow, maybe tonight, maybe next week. But there is no way to buttress a fog-bound ship against an impact with the rocks. We must lift the fog. We can damn the skipper and curse the crew and shift the cargo and make this expedient or that expedient. But destruction is inevitable until the fog is lifted and we can see where we are and where we are going. I remember years ago, when I was in school, we were asked occasionally to memorize the classics of American oratory. And one of the things that we were asked to memorize then was the introduction to Webster's famous reply to Hayne, made in the United States Senate more than 100 years ago. I recall it in substance, at least at this moment. Webster says, when a ship has been tossed in foul weather for many days, and on a turbulent and tempestuous sea, the mariner avails himself of the first pause in the storm, the first glance of the sun, to take his bearings, to read his compass, and see how far the winds have driven him from his true course. That is a cue for us this evening. There has been no pause in the storm, no glance of the sun, it's true. But we still can take our bearings. We can still lift this fog if we have the courage and the industry to look at the blueprint of American purpose and see exactly what it was designed to do. Everything on earth is designed for a purpose, including men and women and governments. The man who built this building that we are in tonight, the architect who conceived of it, he planned it first. He knew what it was supposed to do. He didn't just call in the bricklayers, layers, and the carpenters and tell them to go to it, and he would see how they proceeded as they went along. He had a definite design in his mind. He drew a plan. And underneath that plan, He based and assembled certain truths. He knew that 2 and 2 was 4. He knew that there are 12 inches in a foot. He knew the multiplication table could be relied upon. He accepted certain things, in other words, as inescapably and indisputably true. And basing that blueprint upon those truths, he planned this building, and the building was erected pursuant to the plan. And if you want to know what is in the foundation of this structure, you can look at that blueprint and find out. And when you see from the blueprint the constituents of that foundation, you can know how safe you are tonight sitting here in this banquet hall. If you don't believe in the type of foundation that he has constructed, if you don't believe that it is sound and solid and dependable, then we had better get out. Because this happens to be the building that we are in. And this building is founded upon what the architect put there. And upon the safety of this shelter, the foundation is made. And the solidarity of that foundation tells the story of the solidarity of a building. Now, likewise, 175 years ago, a handful of the greatest political architects and builders ever assembled in the world came together in Philadelphia. There was no American Republic at that time. This was 1776. These men proposed to erect a political structure which would house themselves and their posterity. And like the good architects and builders that they were, they too assembled foundational stones of truth. And upon those foundational stones, they planned a structure. And that structure was the American Republic. Now we can lift this fog that besets us all tonight from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Canada to Mexico. We can lift this fog by reading this blueprint, determining the nature of the foundation and the purpose of the structure. And when we have made that determination, we can put this ship of state back on the road where it belongs and drive it firmly and courageously to the destination marked out for it by the founding fathers. Here is the blueprint. Let's read it. Here is the American Declaration of Independence. The thing spoken with the first breath of the new life of this republic, the first syllable of the first sentence. Here are the foundation stones. This is the base and the bottom upon which our structure rests. If you do not have confidence in these foundational stones, if you do not believe in them as firmly as the founding fathers did, that is your privilege. You may not believe in ready-mixed concrete either, or stone, or brick that's under this building. That's your privilege. But if you do not subscribe to the foundations upon which this republic is based, don't try to defend its superstructure, because upon its foundation, the safety and the future of the American Republic depend. Here's stone number one, as disclosed by the blueprint. We, said the founding fathers in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident. They require no proof. Here is the two and two. Here is the mathematical calculations at the base and the bottom of the building, the things which are beyond dispute in the mind of any architect. These truths are self-evident. Number one, that all men are created. Let's pause there a minute, my friends. Here is the first foundational stone of the American Republic. Here is a declaration that God exists. Not a pious declaration made by a minister of the gospel in order to exhort you to save your soul. No. This happens to be an architectural placement in the foundation of the American state. This is a constructional postulate. This is at the base and the bottom of the building. All men are created. There is a God, in other words. And there is an unusual kind of a God here, too. Not just a God that has wound up the universe and then thrown it out to kick its way out while the God went fishing. A creator is a most unusual and special type of God. When the Declaration of Independence says that all men are created, It says that you and I and each and every one of us in this room and in this world have a personal dispensation from Almighty God to live. That you and He have a rendezvous one with each other that is unlike any other rendezvous with any other one of God's creatures. This is a tremendous statement. All men are created. But let's move on. Second fundamental truth. Second rock supporting the structure. That all men are created equal. Now, we have heard a lot about American equality. We have been twitted with it by our subversive enemies, taunted with the alleged hypocrisy of what we profess to be equality and which is, in their jargon, not equality at all. We hear a lot about the rich and the poor and the exploiters and the exploited and the malefactors of great wealth and the underprivileged and the this and the that. Let's see what the doctrine of American equality is as it is stated and set forth in the blueprint. All men are created equal. They are equal in God's sight. And for that reason, and for no other reason that I could ever find in any law book, they are equal before the law of the land. Equality before God and the equality before the laws of this country. That is the sum and the substance, the beginning and the end of American equality. This is a very informative fact. It is one that we all need to know. There is no other kind of equality, my friends, on earth. As I look over this audience, I observe, of course, that all of the women are beautiful. And some of the men, at least, are not handsome. But up and down the rows of tables, every person is an individual, completely unlike any other individual in the room, and completely unlike any other individual in the world. And if you should assemble the whole of human nature up in a single file across the world, you would find that not only do their fingerprints differ distinctively one from another, but their whole personality is different. All the king's horses and all the king's laws cannot possibly make human nature identical. God has created them equal in His sight. And because we have followed this commandment of God, we have made them equal before the law. And in every other way, human nature has been and will continue to be unequal. Unequal in stature. Unequal in intellect, unequal in incentive, unequal in achievement. And when you stop to realize this all-pervasive inequality that God has stamped upon each one of His personalities on earth, how absurd it is to talk about inequalities of complexion, inequalities of economic condition, inequalities that arise out of certain geographical locations. These inequalities are absurd because, of course, men and women are unequal in all respects. They are entitled to equal protection of the laws. Their life is just as important as anybody else's life in the sight of God, and so it is in the sight of the law. So much for equality. Let's move on. Look at these other stones here in the foundation, just a few of them. Stone number three. That all men are endowed by their Creator. By Truman, not by the Bill of Rights, not by the Constitution, not by Stalin or Hitler. Endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. God is the source of these. Life, it says. Liberty and the right to pursue happiness. Life, liberty, and the right to pursue happiness. These are God's gifts. That's why they're unalienable. That's why they can't be taken from you. That's why they are as inseparable from you as the heart beats in your breast and symbolizes the continuity of the life that God breathed into your soul. Now, here is the final truth, the most confused and misunderstood truth of all. To secure these rights, to preserve these God-given unalienables, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Here, my friends, is the purpose of government in the United States. Government has a special purpose and a special nature. It is meant to preserve the God-given rights of man. It has a special object, a highly restricted type of agency. It is a servant hired to do a particular job, a servant which derives all of its power and all of its resources from the people themselves. This begins to clarify the fog. Now we see the objective. Now we see why a government designed for a narrowly circumscribed purpose, namely to protect the God-given rights of man, why such a government flounders and falters and blunders when it tries to take upon itself jobs which are foreign to its nature. Let's take a dishwasher, an electric dishwasher, which you women understand. An electric dishwasher, and I could go into great detail about that, but I won't do it. An electric dishwasher is a wonderful device. It's magical in its operation. It is designed to wash dishes, and it washes them very well, I have found. But what do you think would happen to it if you tried to use it as a garbage disposal unit? Suppose instead of putting the dishes in the dishwasher and washing them, you just decided to make an all-purpose appliance out of it. You put in the tin cans and the pork bones and the garbage and everything else, and then you turned it on. The result would be not a disposal of garbage, but an accumulation of it. Goodbye, dishwasher. A thing that is tortured and twisted out of the object for which it is made becomes ridiculous. And it is destined to destruction. My friends, the American government cannot escape the destiny of its own nature any more than a dishwasher can escape the destiny of its purpose. The dishwasher was made to wash dishes. The government of the United States was made to protect the God-given rights of man. While it did that for 150 years in this country, it was the toast and the envy of mankind. But since it has been twisted and tortured into an all-purpose instrument for the disposal of garbage and the disposal and satisfaction of every human want and every human design, it has begun to creak and to crumple, and its destruction under such an onerous, denatured task is only a matter of time. That is a sobering recollection. This thing must be understood, and it must be understood clearly if we are to lift the fog. These may be unwelcome conceptions to the American people. Because they have been blinded to the real purpose of American government for so many years. Nevertheless, this is the foundation now of the structure that we are all sworn to depend and to defend. And you say, well, this is a difficult thing for the people to understand. How are we going to get the Declaration of Independence into the minds and into the hearts of the rank and file after so many years of miseducation? We can do that precisely by reducing it to its simplest term. I know that the intellectuals have attempted to confuse it. I know many intellectuals personally. When they talk about liberty, they immediately jump into footnotes and into the stacks of libraries and into language that is obtuse and misunderstandable. Well, sometimes people feel that the continuity of their vocation is to continue to make simple things complex. That's a peculiar twist of the so-called intellectual. The intellectual, in my book, by the way, is a fellow who has had more education than his intellect is capable of absorbing. I think the time has come to make the subject of every man's liberty understandable to him. He protects it in the voting booth. He is the man who is responsible for the perpetuation of the American state every 2, 4, 6 years. The thing must be made understandable to him, not just to the professor or to the intellectual. And it can be understandable to him. I think, for instance, of electricity. This, too, is a very volatile subject. Nobody can define electricity. We have captured it. We use it. Nobody can define it. But every housewife, or every houseman, for that reason, doesn't matter, knows enough about electricity to make it serviceable. The housewife knows that when the bulb burns out, she can change it and put another bulb in. She's not an electrical engineer, but she knows that much. She also knows that when Junior comes along and kicks the plug out of the wall, she picks up the disjointed plug, and what does she do with it? Does she put it in her mouth, or in the sink, or in the bathtub? No, she puts it back in the socket where the juice is. She knows where the electricity comes from, so she changes the bulb and replaces the socket. She hasn't had any degree in electrical engineering, but she knows that simple operation. The electric companies have seen that you know that. If you didn't know that much, there wouldn't be enough servicemen available to give you the bulb-changing, socket-replacing service that the American people would require. So they have given you that education. And there's one thing else about this electricity, too. That is the insulation. The insulation of the wire that comes from the socket to the light. Every woman and every man knows that if the insulation is broken, you won't get any light either. And in addition to that, you may get a short circuit, which may start a fire. So you know enough about insulation to put a Band-Aid around it or something and hold it together until the old man gets home. Just three things about electricity. You know that the power plant is there, the juice is in the socket, the insulation must be watched, and when that is done, lo and behold, you have light. My friends, it's the same thing with the light of liberty. We can teach people the elements of liberty in exactly the same way that they have learned the elements of electricity. First of all, the most important thing of all, the source of liberty. The source of liberty is God. The Declaration of Independence says so. All men are created, all men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Here is the source, the power plant of human liberty. Without God, there is no use trying to defend freedom. Without God, freedom disappears. And as William Penn said 100 years before the Declaration of Independence was written, those people who will not be governed by God will be ruled by tyrants. Go back to where Penn stood in 1684 and look in both directions, back to Herod and forward to Hitler and Stalin. And you will see no exception to that statement. Either you will be governed by God and be free, or you will reject God and substitute tyrannical government for God's governance. So God is the source of liberty. And job number one for every salesman of freedom, job number one is the location of the power plant. Job number one is a great religious revival of faith in God in America. We cannot escape that duty. Not because we wish to propagate religion, not because we wish to save the souls of our citizens, but because we must revive faith in God in order to save the American Republic. There's no other logical basis for this foundation that I've described to you. Secondly, what is the insulation? What is the thing that protects liberty as it comes from God and goes to you? The protecting insulation for human liberty is the limitation upon the power of government. What did the founders of this republic do immediately after having declared our independence? They wrote constitutions and they wrote bills of rights, state and federal. And what was the purpose of the constitutions and what was the purpose of the bills of rights? To limit government, to restrict it to its protective purpose, to hold it in line. The constitutions were designed to limit government. Liberty consists in the limitation of governmental power to preserve these rights and to do nothing else. Governments are instituted among men. Here is something that was set upon that line. That is a good text for everybody who is setting out to keep the American structure of freedom upon its basic foundations and so to preserve it intact. Here is something that is neither old nor new. Something that was said 40 years ago by a great American, a great historian, a great president, 40 years ago, before he was president of the United States, Woodrow Wilson said this: the history of liberty is a history of the limitations upon the power of government. The accumulation and concentration of governmental power has always preceded the death of human freedom. When you resist, therefore, he concludes, the accumulation and concentration of governmental power, you are resisting the processes of death, because such concentration inevitably and always precedes the death of human freedom. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we can begin to see what has been happening to freedom in the United States in the last 25, 30, 40 years. Governmental power has been increased and concentrated, and liberty in the same proportion has been shrinking. Where the government swells, the people shrink. Remember what the Declaration of Independence says: the government has no place to get anything, whether it's money or power, except from the governed. It derives its powers, its money, its resources from the people. And as the government grows, the people shrink.